The truth is that we are in a climate emergency. We have less than 10 years to make substantial changes to our society and way of life and our economy.
I want to stress from the outset that this pandemic is far from over.
Those who have never fought for the colours they fly should be careful about criticising those who have.
Hello, you're listening to Bloomberg Westminster, your daily guide to British politics. I'm Caroline Hepke.
Good afternoon, I'm Ewan Potts. Are we in for a Christmas crisis? Despite the statement from the Porter Felixstowe this week, there are concerns about shortages of goods such as toys and decorations for the festive season. It's less about the port infrastructure itself, but the lack of lorry drivers to move the containers. Sainsbury's says it's delayed its toy sale, usually held in October to later in November, to make sure it has enough stock. And the British Retail Consortium says that retailers are trying to find alternative shipping routes, but further disruption may be unavoidable.
Unavoidable. Meanwhile, in England, GP surgeries that do not offer enough face-to-face appointments will be unable to access new funding under plans announced today. It's part of a new package of measures to improve services and is being backed by £250 million. GPs have hit back, saying that the money does not go far enough, with the chair of the British Medical Association's GP committee saying it is truly frightening that the government is so ignorant to the needs of such a core part of the NHS.
Well, let's speak to our guest this morning, Bob Blackman, Conservative MP for Harrow East in London. Thanks so much for joining us on the programme today. Now, are you worried about Christmas? We won't be locked down like we were last year, but could there be problems with supply of goods in the shops?
Well, there's clearly a shortage of drivers at the moment to move goods around. The reality is that, as we're discovering now, the average age of an HGV driver is 52. Many of them have taken the position whereby, quite reasonably, that the long hours, the unsocial position they have in driving all over the country, and indeed, this is not confined to the UK, this is, you know, all over Europe, that they are working unsocial hours. They're not paid tremendously well. And a lot of them are saying, well, actually, we want to do less hours and possibly not even return to work and retire, because many of them are age 60 plus and taking the view of saying, well, because of the lockdown, because of the lack of work that's been available, they've chosen to retire instead of coming back to work. Now, that means we've got to train more people, but make sure they're safe on the roads. I mean, we don't want people driving HGVs without proper training and without proper licences. So it's a case of getting people up to speed and making sure they can move goods around the country in the way that we'd all want.
But there aren't really shortages of goods in European shops, surely?
Well, I mean, I've seen reports of shortages in various different parts of Europe, saying that, you know, they've got the same problems. If you talk to the politicians in the various different countries, they're all saying there's a shortage of drivers, full stop. Most of this, is, of course, has been driven by the fact that drivers have not been working during the period of the pandemic when lockdowns have been in place. And so, therefore, goods have been transported in the same way. And it's been covered up, really, by the fact that less has had to be moved during that time, because, obviously, it's not the same type of economic performance.
With no cheap European labour, I think it's pretty clear that wages have to go up for HGV drivers, and probably in a number of other sectors as well. In fact, it's something that the Prime Minister trumpeted in his Conservative Party speech. Are you concerned about wage rises right across the economy, given that we already have an inflation problem? Could we get into a wage inflation spiral?
There's always a risk of that, but the reality is that certainly in the UK, we've existed on getting people in from other parts of Europe, particularly from Eastern Europe, where obviously the cost of living is relatively lower than in the UK. That has suppressed wages in the UK. And now the people that were coming to do those jobs are not necessarily coming anymore. In fact, many have chosen to depart back to Poland or Romania or Bulgaria in particular. And they may make a choice to return in due course. And, of course, extra visas have been offered for periods of time for that. We also know that some 4 million people who were from other parts of the European Union have registered to remain in the UK. And the challenge is, are those people still in the UK, or have they chosen to return to the country of their origin? So a lot of work to be done here.
Yeah, exactly. And I suppose that's what I wanted to ask. What are the kind of solutions to these looming problems? I mean, I, in the last 3 weeks, have struggled to book a GP appointment. I've struggled to fill my petrol tank. And I've also received my gas and electricity bill for the prediction for the next sort of 6 months, which has gone up well over 10%. I don't think I'm alone. The optimism in the Tory party conference, I was sort of struck by. Is there a concern? Do you have a concern that the government, that Conservatives are perhaps out of touch with some of the crises that are hitting many, many voters?
Well, I think, you know, dealing with the issues that you've covered, which I think are important, obviously we've had the fuel problems, which are not problems at the refineries. There's plenty of enough fuel in the refineries. It's getting from the refineries to the fuel stations. In many cases, of course, there's not been a shortage of diesel at petrol pumps, but there has been a shortage of petrol. And just demonstrates the problems that we face logistically. Now, the problem there is a lack of drivers to drive the fuel from the refineries to the stations.
Equally, yeah, but the question is around the out-of-touchness issue, because, I mean, yeah. I understand that it's a driver issue, but I still couldn't get any petrol.
Yeah, but one of the issues is that people panicked immediately, thinking, oh, my goodness, there won't be any petrol, queued up and filled up their tanks, not reasonably, because they're thinking that's the problem. And, of course, the tanks are finite. They emptied. And we also know that at any one time, fuel stations only have 40% of fuel in their tanks anyway. So there's a logistical issue that has to be resolved. In terms of the NHS, myself and many other colleagues have been pressing the government very hard about getting face-to-face GP appointments. I mean, my constituents are obviously concerned they're not able to get those appointments, and we've got to get the position righted whereby GPs are seeing patients face-to-face. I think there's a case, certainly, where people who've got symptoms can go through a process of calling 111, getting a diagnosis, and then being told, yes, maybe see your GP, maybe you need to see a nurse, maybe you need to go to A&E straight away. You know, that's a faster process rather than waiting for a GP appointment unnecessarily. So I think there's an advantage to this process, but it doesn't suit everyone, and particularly for elderly people who may struggle to explain their circumstances over a telephone. They really do need face-to-face appointments, and we're making announcements today to make sure that there's a access for people to GPs so they can see their GP face-to-face. A lot of times, you will know, if you want to see a GP, often it's because the GP needs to see the extent of any infection or whatever problem there is, rather than just describing it over the phone. And that makes sense.
Something else that's been in the news in the past day, 12 domestic energy suppliers have now gone under. At what point does the government have to step in here? Some of the really big firms say they can't pay their bills. This is going to be a problem, isn't it?
Well, it is. And clearly, I mean, the position is that there's a general shortage of energy across the Europe. We know that that's the case, particularly of gas. Now, the problem slightly here is one of, as the economy comes back into operation, factories reopen, offices go back to normalised working, the demand for energy increases, and therefore that leads to a supply and demand problem. Now, what the government obviously have to do is have long-term measures to make sure we've got the supplies that we need, and then deal with the short-term problems of how we get that supply immediately. And obviously, as you said quite rightly, bills are going up because the market is saying, well, we don't have the supply, therefore we can charge more money for the supply that we've got, which is going to be a big fear for a lot of people this winter. So I think the government has to take action to regulate the industry and make sure that the supplies are provided at prices which people can afford. And that's one of the reasons why, obviously, Kwasi Kwarteng has said, well, we're not going to move that cap on energy prices because that will really be an impact for everyone. And then the final thing I would just say on the energy issues is a lot of people's energy contracts are coming up for renewal. And I would say to people, be very cautious about what you do in terms of renewing that contract, because you may be in a position whereby just going on to the different tariff may be the appropriate way forward. I'm seeking some urgent advice on this, because I think from Which and other organisations that can be act on behalf of consumers, we do need to see a position whereby advice is given to people rather than just automatically signing up to the tariff that's being offered by their energy supplier.
Okay. Briefly, a word on Brexit. What do you think of the EU's offer to slash Northern Ireland customs checks? And as I say, just very briefly, I'm sorry.
Well, it's a good start. We've got to make sure that the so-called protocol benefits the people of Northern Ireland and obviously the people of the UK. We can't have is the European court overseeing all this. And it should be determined by UK courts, not by the European courts. But it's a good start, and I hope that we can do it.
Well, let's have a look at what else is making news in the world of politics. The Brexit trade talks go on. The European Union and the UK are bracing for a new round of negotiations over trade barriers in Northern Ireland. The two sides will talk in London over the coming days, with Maros Sefcovic, the EU's chief Brexit negotiator, voicing optimism that the next weeks will see the two sides jointly arrive at an agreed solution that Northern Ireland truly deserves.
Well, there's no relief, meanwhile, in sight for house hunters. According to a survey by the Royal Institution of Chartered Surveyors, buyers did return to the housing market last month, but they found that homes were increasingly in short supply. The findings do suggest that the market is very solid and underpinned, even as the stamp duty tax holiday has been pulled back. House prices are expected to keep rising in the coming year, Ewan.
More rising. Something else that's rising as well, the energy market. More trouble there. The gas supplier CNG Group has announced it will no longer provide natural gas to its utility clients. Now, this is a problem because it supplies wholesale gas to domestic energy companies who then sell it onto households. And this move could push more retail suppliers out of business. Weeks of record prices have already seen 12 retail businesses go under since August. And that's forced almost 2 million British households to change companies.
Well, speaking of British households, how are they feeling at this point? As the headlines have been pretty difficult when it comes to Christmas shortages, petrol price rises and shortages, and a lack of GP appointments. Well, joining us now is Chris Curtis, who is Senior Research Manager at Opinium, who's been looking at this. Chris, good morning. Thanks for being on the programme. So people in the UK worried about the squeeze on wages, rising prices, the cost of living, with Christmas sort of a few weeks away, of course?
The short answer is yes, they are. And I think obviously this is a difficult time of year for many families, but there's a lot of things all happening at the same time that I think makes this particularly bad. Also, obviously, all of the things that you just mentioned, but also we've had the government cutting universal credit, a move that's overwhelmingly backed by the opposed by the public. And also, early next year, we've got extra taxes coming in for people. So there's basically a whole lot of things that are hitting people all at the same time. And I think we're in for a very, very difficult few months. And I think in turn, the question is that going to be is that going to create a situation that's really, really difficult for the government as well? Because they're obviously riding high in the polls at the moment. But if a lot of their voters feel a lot worse off in a few months' time than they do at the moment, are they going to start to want to punish the Conservatives and Boris Johnson in the poll?
Yes, because at the moment it doesn't look like the government is really getting the blame for all these things. It seems like there's a whole confluence of cost of living things coming down the line. Is there any sign that it's hitting the government support or not yet?
Well, the pandemic has obviously created a bit of a barrier here. So that has meant that people are a lot more willing to give the government the benefit of the doubt over these issues and blame the pandemic and blame things that are outside the government's control than they otherwise would. Having said that, when you do ask the public, do you think the government bears some responsibility for this, most people do think that Boris Johnson, the government, and even Brexit are at least partly responsible for the challenges that are now being faced. I think the reason we're not seeing a shift in the polls is not because people aren't willing to think the government is basically running things quite badly, but it's that they don't think anyone else would do any better. So they're not willing to switch their support from Conservatives to Labour, because I don't basically think the Labour government will be doing any better job at facing any of these issues.
Yeah, and these are very tricky, and some of them are global issues too. So then on that note, you know, the thing that Boris Johnson trumpeted at the Tory party conference, which is that the rollout of the vaccines and, you know, dealing with the pandemic. How do the public feel now about the pandemic? We've also had that MP's report, very damning, very critical report about the early action on the pandemic that caused unnecessary deaths. How do the public think now about where we are with COVID-19?
Well, I think in many cases, the public think the government got a lot of things wrong, particularly around those lockdown rules. People would say to you all of the time in focus groups and in polls that they thought the government was acting too slowly when going into lockdown. Firstly in March, although they forgave them for March, but particularly those later lockdowns in sort of autumn of that year, they thought the government was way too slow to make those decisions. And actually at the time, that had quite a dent on support for the Conservatives. It was the only period of time where we really saw leads for the Labour Party in the polls was after those bad decisions back then. And that's true in hindsight as well. People do think that the government made these bad decisions. But the overall success of the vaccine rollout has sort of mitigated against any political damage that those bad decisions might have made.
And what about some of the personalities? How does Boris Johnson v. Starmer look at the moment?
Well, overall, their popularity is roughly the same. Our polling tends to show that Keir Starmer has slightly higher approval ratings than Boris Johnson, although that varies from week to week. The big thing is that views of Keir Starmer are soft, whereas views of Boris Johnson are quite hard. Most people have made up their mind about Boris Johnson. They're not going to change it now. Keir Starmer, some people sort of think that he's a bit weak, but you know, they still don't think they've seen enough of him to be able to come to a firm view. Overall, when you look at the numbers as well, sort of digging beneath those headline numbers, Boris Johnson's generally viewed as a sort of strong leader who's a bit incompetent, whereas Keir Starmer's viewed as a competent leader who's actually fairly weak. And I think that's interesting to see how that dynamic plays out. Is the public, in a few years' time when they have to make a decision between these two men, if these two men are indeed still leaders of their party, are the public going to choose the one they think is a bit more competent, or are they going to choose the one that they think is a bit more of a strong leader? And that's an interesting thing to look out to as we sort of track the polls in the run-up to the next election.
Yes, that is a fascinating dynamic, fascinating way of putting it. Well, perhaps the other person that fascinates the public a little bit is Rishi Sunak, the Chancellor. And of course, he was in the United States this week, making a big trip there and talking about a corporation tax. It's sort of a global issue that's being dealt with. How do Brits think about the Chancellor now?
He's still just about the most popular politician in the UK. He was incredibly popular. Like, during the pandemic, his numbers that we saw in the polling was unlike numbers that you'd normally ever see for a politician. They have declined a bit, as I suppose they inevitably would if you are no longer handing out a load of free money to people. But I think he's still fairly popular. He's still just about the most popular politician in the UK. But having said that, this is going to be a very, very difficult time for him. He's had to make already some really tough decisions that have, you know, going to hurt a lot of people's lives, and he's going to have to make a lot more of them. We've obviously got spending reviews coming up, and there's going to be lots of cuts and hardship to potentially come from them. And if we do have a winter, as we've been discussing, where the economy is really, really starting to hurt people's lives, whether that's through inflation, cost of living, wages, whatever it happens to be, is he going to take the political hit for that? And if so, is this sort of Superman Rishi Sunak image going to take a hit as well?
We spend lots of time on here on Bloomberg Westminster talking about the party conferences. Fascinating for us. And of course, anybody attending the party conference is the most important place in the world. Do they have any impact on the public's view of the main parties?
Well, nothing really has an impact on views of the main parties on its own. You know, what wins and loses elections are, firstly, what happens during the election campaign itself, but also sort of very long-running things. You know, the strategies and will build up and tell over time, and they need to tell them again and again and again and again before they cut through with the public. Because, of course, most of the public aren't listening, aren't paying attention to most things that happen in politics. But yes, even having said that, the party conferences are still one of the occasions when parties get to set out their stall to the public. Our polling that we conducted after both conference speeches shows that when showed the highlights of the speeches, people reacted slightly more positively to Keir Starmer's speech than Boris Johnson's speech. But you know, what we've seen in the polls so far is basically very little movement in either direction.
Okay. The other interesting thing that I thought emerged from your most recent polling just a few days ago, the public still want pandemic restrictions. And when I'm out and about in London now, it almost feels like normal. I mean, I'm back on the tube. The streets in the City of London are busy. The streets in North London, where I am, are pretty packed too. And yet people still seem to want to be kept safe.
Yeah, I think that's true. And this has been a constant theme throughout the whole pandemic. It's not that people want restrictions. Mm. It's that people are basically willing to accept whatever restrictions the government puts on them within reason in order to fight the pandemic. Because, you know, they're very, very scared of the pandemic. They're very, very scared of the virus. And yes, that's declined quite a lot recently. And that's why we're seeing lots more movement, lots more people out and about, not wearing masks in and around London and other places across the country as well. But even still, if the virus does come back, even after everything we've been through, the public still tell us, as they have consistently imposed, that they'd be willing to have those restrictions on their lives put back in place if it was needed to fight the virus.
As we move beyond focus on COVID, what are people's other priorities? Are we starting to see people focusing back on the NHS and the economy and, you know, the usual issues?
Yeah, so the top two issues that we're seeing people talk about are the NHS, particularly how we get rid of that backlog as we come out of the pandemic of operations and things and the extra money that's needed there. Obviously, the government's put a load of extra money into it. That's what the big part of what this tax rise next year is going to pay for. And then, yes, of course, the economy, which I expect to increase in salience in the coming months with all of the issues that we've been talking about to do with inflation, etc. Beyond that, there's a few other issues that seem to be creeping up the agenda. Firstly, we've got the environment in the lead to COP crisis. Lots of people, you know, the environment never used to register on our issues index a few years ago. Now it's regularly sort of a top three issue among the public. And the other two are crime. Lots of people very worried about crime, particularly in urban centres such as London, where they're, you know, before the pandemic, and again, we're starting to see now quite a bit of knife crime in London. And then the final thing is education. A lot of kids have got behind because their schools have been shut so much over the past couple of years. How are those kids going to catch up and, you know, be able to catch up on the education they've missed? So they're the big issues that I expect to dominate politics over the coming years.
Bloomberg Westminster. Listen weekdays at noon on DAB Digital Radio in London.